The following is a CRN Digital Talk special, the best of Rock Window Radio.
From CRN Digital Talk, it's Rock Window Radio. Good evening, I'm Chuck Wilder in Hollywood, and welcome to Rock Window Radio and the Baby Boomer Network. Rock Window Radio is dedicated to classic and neoclassic rock. And now, here's your host, rock and roll historian, Marcus.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
Good evening, good morning to the East Coast, Buenas noches, to amigos across Rock Window Latin America. You're on Rock Window Radio, live from Los Angeles, Hollywood, California. Ah, one of my heroes. You're listening to CRN Digital Talk Radio. My name is Marcus, this is Rock Window Radio. From Publishers Weekly, in regards to Hank Bordowitz's book on CCR, Bad Moon Rising, the unofficial history of Creedence Clearwater Revival. Departing from the psychedelic sound that dominated the airwaves in the late 60s, California's Creedence Clearwater Revival churned out a string of roots rock hits so critically acclaimed and commercially successful that after the Beatles broke up in 1971, CCR was hailed by some as the world's most popular band. But within a year, CCR2 had disbanded, victims of internal squabbles, record deals that didn't work, and destroyed a lot of groups. Bordowitz, a contributor to such magazines as Spin, a guitar player, charts the band's beginning as a quartet of a high school pal struggling to make ends meet in the Northern California club circuit. Of course, you know from there, he went on to Proud Mary, Bad Moon Rising, Have You Ever Seen the Rain? What a phenomenal group. And Mr. Bordowitz, are you on the phone, sir?
I am here, not to mention Fortunate Son, one of the interesting songs to play after an Army commercial.
How true. Be all you can be. First up, I'm sure you want to wish happy birthday to John Fogerty.
Absolutely. John turned 60, well, yesterday where I am, but today where you're at. The miracles of modern communication, I tell you.
In your book, Bad Moon Rising, you utilized over 500 sources for this book?
Oh, yeah. I do a lot of research on my projects. I try and be as accurate as humanly possible. Of course, not having been in the heart of the band and everything, you can't be totally accurate. I was not a fly on the wall, but I did talk to several flies on the wall for this book.
Mm-hmm.
Not the least of whom were, I talked to Tom Fogerty before he passed on, and Doug Clifford, and Stu Cook actually vetted the book for me.
We reported on Rock Window Radio last week that Stu Cook just got married in Lake Tahoe. Doug Clifford stood in as the best man, but John Fogerty was not to be seen.
Unfortunately, they don't talk. That's been a problem since before the band broke up, but certainly since the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, when the band was inducted.
Yes, he refused to play with them on stage.
It was not a pretty thing. I've heard that story from, again, four people, and all of them tell basically the same story.
You say in your foreword that this is one of the saddest stories in rock and roll. That it was like a Shakespearean tragedy. What do you mean by that? Why?
Well, because you've got your tragic hero. I saw John when I started this book as one, and that really hasn't changed too much, in my opinion. Though I got to say, I saw him on this tour, and I have never seen John. I mean, I've seen him maybe 8-9 times since he's gone solo, and I've never seen him look happier or play better. I mean, he was just terrific, and he's got a great band.
That's great to hear.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you know, it's good to see one of your... I mean, I picked up a guitar, an electric guitar, largely because of John Fogerty.
A lot of us did, for sure. Even more so
than the Beatles, because John spoke the blues, and by the time, you know, the 70s rolled around, the Beatles weren't talking that no more. In a lot of ways, like so many people, he could be his own worst enemy. It's funny because after the book came out, Joel Selvin and I sat down. I asked him why he never wrote this book, because he certainly was a lot closer to it than I was. And he said, well, yeah, that may be true, but I just didn't want to write the rock and roll version of Bleak House, which is Dickens' book about a lawsuit that goes on long after everyone involved in it is dead.
Right.
And
yeah, for years, John kind of hid in a cabin up in Oregon, I guess it was.
Yeah, or, you know, in his family home in the Bay Area.
Refused to write because he was had something to do with Fantasy Records. It wouldn't let him do what he wanted to do. Well, you probably know a lot about that
era. Basically what happened is he wanted to get his publishing rights back. When they signed the contract in 1967 with Saul Zance, after he bought Fantasy Records from the Weiss brothers, he signed away his publishing. I mean, they did it in the Weiss brothers contract, too, but it didn't matter then.
But that's where the money is, the publishing, isn't that right?
Clearwater Publishing, it's what built the Fantasy building. It's what put up the money for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and the Ralph Bakshi version of Lord of the Rings and, you know, all the things that Saul Zance was honored for at the Academy Awards were funded largely with CCR money, as was the Fantasy building, which is, I mean, a good hunk of a square block at 10th and Parker in Berkeley.
Now, with John really the songwriter of the group, and you know, I don't doubt that Stu Cook and Doug Clifford and Tom Fogerty had some talent, but he kind of directed the band in the whole arena of concerts and album production. He was really the genius and probably one of America's greatest songwriters. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, no question.
You do give some insight in your book on his love of nature, fascination of the South, a guy from Berkeley, California, coming from a broken home, social political statements, and this led to helping the band self-destruct, huh?
Well, not those elements necessarily, but...
Well, the other band members weren't contributing as much. I mean, you think they'd put these things behind them now, being 60 years old today?
Yeah. Well, you'd think so, but some grudges die real hard. And I suspect that this is one that's going to go on like when you have bad feelings in a family. A band, you know, a lot of extents, like a family. And in this band, even more so, because Tom and John were brothers. Tom was the older brother, and he joined his little brother's band as the singer. And suddenly, John developed this great voice, this amazing voice, which he claims came from just, you know, having a poor sound system, so he had to yell over it. You know, it's cut through the vocals. And suddenly, Tom is kind of just the rhythm guitarist. And around the time of Pendulum, when they're just selling millions and millions of records and they're having hit records all over the place, Tom wanted to sing lead on a record. Didn't even have to be a single, just wanted to sing a lead. And John wouldn't let him.
And that was
really the heart of the whole thing.
Is that one of the reasons why Mardi Gras was such a terrible album? I mean, unless you're a true I'm a true Creedence fan, but Mardi Gras was definitely not one of their better albums.
No, definitely not one of their better albums.
And that was because the other members participated.
It's because, it's not even so much they participated. It's because Doug never claimed to be songwriters.
Yes.
They just wanted to have a little more say in what happened, and basically John said, okay, you can do a third of the album, and I'll do my third, and you know, you do your third. And that wasn't what they had in mind at all.
Yeah.
But that's what wound up happening.
It's really the demise of CCR as we know it.
Yeah, and, well, the demise of CCR was an album earlier with Pendulum.
I liked Pendulum, though.
But when Tom left the group.
Ah.
Tom left the group right after that. In fact, I think he left just about the same time it was released.
Their most successful album is Cosmos Factory? You'd
probably,
say?
Yeah. Yeah,
probably. Can you share, do you remember maybe a story or two from the book that you might want to share with our listeners? And
I think one of the most telling stories came real early in their career when they're recording and John is going in to do the overdubs and the rest of the band is beginning to object, saying, hey, you know, we want to be here too. and Jake Rohrer was there, kind of aide-de-camp, takes him to a pizza shop in San Francisco. They were recording this at Wally Hyder's, and John comes down, and he says, listen, you know, we've got the formula. This is working. I want to keep it working. You know, I don't want to be a one-hit wonder here. And I have no desire to go back to the car wash. I mean, they were all working pretty menial jobs before this. Though Stu and Doug did have, you know, a college education. Mm-hmm. Cosmo got his nickname because they were at a frat party one, and it was Doug C. Clifford, or Clifford C. Clifford is what one of the frat brothers called Doug. And someone asked, so what does the C stand for? And Doug thought about it for a minute. He said, Cosmo. And the name stuck. But, you know, they didn't, John didn't have that advantage. I think he, like Bruce Springsteen, he had like maybe a semester of community college. And they both kind of decided that they weren't, you know, that this education trip was not for either, you know, the college or for John. And, you know, so he was working some pretty menial jobs then. He was packing boxes at Fantasy Records for a while. And he was doing a lot of stuff like that, and he didn't want to go back to doing that. And, you know, you can't blame him. This is something he'd been working on. I mean, they've been together before this hit. They've been together for 10 years.
Oh, really?
You know, they've been playing since junior high school. And they'd been playing professionally maybe for the previous five.
And their first major hit, was it Proud Mary?
First major hit was probably Susie Q.
Oh, yeah, Susie Q. Which wasn't a song by John, actually. John did not pen that one.
It's a Dale Hawkins song.
There was actually, when you started writing this book, there was a lot of things that came out on Creedence message boards that were criticizing the work even before they read it.
Yeah, that was pretty amusing, actually, mostly because John didn't want to participate in it. And the book is called, by the way, it's going into its third printing now.
Bad Moon Rising, The History of Creedence Clearwater Revival. You're listening to Rock Window Radio. My guest is Hank Bordowitz. He's the author of Bad Moon Rising, a book a few years back on Creedence Clearwater Revival. And I want to thank you so much, Hank, for being on the phone with us tonight. I know it's a little late there in New York, but we'll definitely have you on again after the book comes out, and love to talk to you about you too sometime.
Be happy to do it.
Hank
Thanks
Bordowitz.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for being on Rock Window.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. You're listening to CRN Digital Talk.